Hi, welcome to another episode of Leader Feeder. I'm Suzanne Jakes, the Marketing Coordinator at Unique Training and Development, and I'm here with Kirk Langford, our General Manager.
Yes.
Welcome again, Kirk.
Thanks,
it's always
Suzanne.
Fun. I do enjoy these chats.
Yeah, likewise.
So today on the Leader Feeder, the topic is post-training assessments and survey questions. Not that long ago, I believe we did chat about post-training
Evaluations.
Yeah. That's right. So these are assessments and surveys. So maybe let's talk about what we mean when we say post-training surveys.
Right. So we're hoping that for our thousands and thousands of listeners that heard that last episode about post-training evaluations, that they're going, what? Isn't this the same thing? Right? No. So when we talk about post-training evaluations or post-training assessments, a lot of people might say that they're kind of synonyms. They're basically the same thing, but just to clarify for our conversation, post-training evaluations is more about looking at the actual training itself and saying what worked and what didn't, what went well and what didn't. You know, how did the instructor do? What did the people think of the content, the material? Did they find it engaging? That sort of thing.
Right.
When we're talking about post-training assessments, we're talking more about how much of the training actually stuck. How much of the training have people been able to apply, the participants, how much have they been able to apply on the job afterwards? So we're talking more about the longer term impact of the training on the participants. So that's what we're talking about today.
So, and why would this be important for companies to want to do a survey and evaluation of the training? I know, like, you know, we talk about, so the training happened, we got, we did a survey, and it looks like the impact's been positive. Now what do organizations do? Do they make it part of their process?
So it's really important because you can spend a lot of money on training. I mean, it's just like you can spend a lot of money on marketing. You can spend a lot of money on research and development. You can spend a lot of money on training. And any organization, I think, wants to know two principal things. The first one is, did it work? So there were certain goals that we had with this training. There's a, I mean, there was a reason that training was done, right? Did that actually work? So for example, if we had health and safety training, presumably it's to make the workplace safer. So the post-training assessment can help us understand, did we actually create a safer workplace? For example, have there been fewer accidents on the shop floor since we did the training? So the first part is just, did we accomplish the goal of the training? The second part is, do we feel we got a good ROI, return on investment? If we spent a certain amount of money to either bring in an external trainer like we are, right? Or to have internal training done, either way, there's a cost associated to that. There's a cost for the instructor. There's a cost for the development of the content. There's a cost for the materials. There's a cost to pull people off the shop floor or off the production line in order to be in the training. So the next question is, the first question is, did we reach our goal with this training? The second question is, did we get a good ROI? I mean, if the goal was to, you know, decrease safety, decrease accidents on the shop floor by 20%, and we went through this big week-long training seminar and all these different things, and, you know, there was only one fewer accident than there was the previous year, we may not have really hit our target, which meant we spent a lot of money and effort and resources of the organization for very little gain.
So what I'm hearing is organizations really need to know what they want to achieve from training before they can really, because you need to, I guess, drill down. What do you want to measure and how are you going to measure that impact?
That's a great point. In fact, it can be a problem where you bring in training or you get training done without really thinking of what do I really want or what does, should the organization get out of this training? And then how do you create a post-training assessment if you don't know what you originally were getting the training for? So you're right. You almost, even though we're talking about assessments that happen sometimes 30 days or 60 days or 90 days or maybe even a year after the training, you actually have to be thinking about this before the training even starts. What are we hoping to get out of this training? What are we hoping this training will accomplish? Because then your post-training assessments look to that and say, okay, well, we had identified you know, these three goals in this timeline. Now let's measure whether or not that actually happened. So it's an enormous thing because it's, like I said, it's easy to spend a lot of money on training and afterwards kind of go, well, hey, everyone said they liked it. I guess that's pretty cool. But it's
I know that's what we do.
It's got to be more than that, right? It's got to be more than did they just like it. It's what's been the impact of that training.
Right, because we want to help make organizations, like, you want your organization better, we want your organization better, safer, healthier, right?
That's right.
Yeah. So next question I wanted to talk to you about was methods. Of course, I mean, right in the title of this Leader Feeder, it says survey.
Yeah.
So is that the best method to get all the, to obtain all this feedback? You had mentioned that, you know, whether it was a week or a month or 2 months, you know, companies, I guess, then need to decide when's the best time for them to send this survey out. And then, I mean, I'm assuming, sorry, I asked about best methods and I'm just assuming survey because that is what comes to top of mind. So is there other methods that they could use, and would it pertain to the timeline that they wanted to gather the results?
Mm-hmm. It's a bit of a, I guess, a complex question because it depends on, like you said, what you're looking for.
It was a complex question.
Sure was, yeah. So, I mean, if you think about it, if you're trying to figure out behavior change, which is often what we're doing with training, right? We're saying things are currently done a certain way.
Yes.
The goal of this training is essentially to change the way we do something. So that's a behavior change. We want our people to do something a little bit different, right? So behavior change is a bit tricky because behavior can take a little bit of time. It's not something that overnight we suddenly see an enormous change. So it might be something where you can survey people. You can ask people 30 days later, are you doing this differently? How have your habits changed? And 30 days may not quite be enough time. So in some cases, you might need 30 or 60 or 90 days. Let me try to give you an example. We do a lot of training on conflict management.
Yes.
But you might not have, so then I can go to my frontline leader at the end of the training and say, hey, did you like that? Did you learn about how to manage conflict better? And she could say, yeah, I really felt like I got a lot of useful strategies that was helpful. Okay, great. So there's step one. Then in 30 days, I could go up to her and I could say, How's it going with conflict management? Do you feel like there are fewer conflicts? She could say, well, you know, we haven't really had any big conflicts in the past 30 days, so I haven't really had to deal with any conflicts. So I don't quite yet know whether what I learned was really helpful because, you know, just in the past 30 days, there haven't been maybe anything that's come up that I've been able to use those skills in. Okay. So then I might need to come back in 60 or 90 days and say, hey, you know, now have you noticed anything? And by then, hopefully, she'll be able to say, yeah, there were a couple of conflicts that came up where I felt definitely better able to handle the situation than I would have before the training. Or in another way of measuring that, we might go to HR and say, how many conflicts were escalated to you in the past year? And they might say, oh, well, last year it was this number. Okay, how many this year? They might say, well, we don't have the numbers on that yet. So then I might have to come back later, again, 60, 90, 180 days, maybe even a year, to say, let's look at the conflict numbers from this year over this year.
Mm-hmm.
Let's look at employee engagement numbers, because a lot of organizations will do an employee engagement survey. Mm-hmm. So some of that information might not really show itself in any of the data for some time. It might be a couple of months. Now, as to your question about how to ask for that feedback, surveys are obviously one way.
Of course.
One of the nice things generally about surveys is they are usually anonymous. So what we like about an anonymous survey is I might feel more comfortable sharing my opinion and my thoughts and giving my feedback if I know that it's not necessarily going to come back and I'm not going to sort of get in trouble for it or have anyone say, oh, why did you say that about this organization or about the department?
Right. Again, we like to avoid conflict.
Yeah. We like to avoid conflict. That's right. And so a survey is nice for that reason. But surveys, so that's one thing. The other thing is you can ask a lot of different questions. You can have, you know, scales. You can have open-ended questions. You can have truthful. You can have all sorts of different question types.
Right, so, it doesn't just have to be question, answer.
Yeah.
It can be scales, multiple choice.
Ranking or whatever.
Ranking.
Now, the nice thing, though, or the, rather I should say the downside to surveys, though, is that some people might say, hey, I just don't want to complete this. I don't want to take the time to sit down at the computer and do a 45-minute survey. Because some people, it's easy to get carried away with the survey and go, oh, I'd like to know about that. And I'd like to know about that. I'd like to know about that. And then next thing we know, we have a 60-question survey. And your folks open it up and they go, I don't want to complete this. When I see, you know, I've answered 3 questions and I'm 1% done, like when it has that progress bar at the bottom, you go, no thanks. So you want to make sure that if you're going to use a survey, it's a reasonable length, right? Mm-hmm. Something that maybe can be completed in, I don't know, 10 minutes, 15 at the most.
Yeah.
And so that's where the other side of feedback or the other side of assessment can come in, is to actually sit down and have conversations with people and say, how are you feeling about conflict management? Or We got training on effective communication. Do you feel like you're communicating more effectively with your team? Can you give me some specific mm-hmm. examples of how the training has allowed you to become a more effective communicator as a leader?
Oh, great.
And then a third one is, like I said earlier, you can look at scores from things like employee engagement surveys. And what's interesting about that is it might not ask a question, are you dealing with fewer conflicts than you were? But what you might see is that thanks to training and maybe even some other initiatives, oh, employee engagement is up. You know, we're up, it's up 5%. Oh, so something we're doing has caused employees to feel more engaged with the company. So then you might, that's a little bit tricky because you go, well, how much of it is thanks to the training?
Yeah.
How much of it is thanks to maybe
could
changes in the culture?
Could you do other surveys?
It can be tricky. It can be really challenging to do that. But it certainly is something you want to do. So you can do surveys.
Okay.
One-on-one conversations or small group conversations are a great thing as well. Those are probably the two principal ones that we tend to see.
Can you highlight any other best practices? Like, I feel like we've kind of spoken generally, and I know this maybe isn't the easiest question because you don't quite know what you want until the organizations say what they want, right? So could you highlight just some bullet point
best practices? Sure. Well, I think the first thing is what we actually already talked about, but I think it's important enough that it's worth repeating. And that is, make sure before the program starts that you've identified the objectives or the goals of the training.
Yeah.
It's very easy for someone to say, hey, we need health and safety training, or you know, we need training on effective communication. You don't dig or ask any further. You just go, okay, I'm going to go look for someone who can do effective communication training. We get that sometimes with our customers when we say, what will your company look like on the other side of this training? If we ask you in 6 months, what will be different about your organization?
Right.
Sometimes we get a really great answer. We get someone going, oh, well, it will be like this. There will be fewer conflicts. People will feel more in the know. Okay, cool. And other people go, I don't really know. We just know we need communication training.
Right. We just know something's not working.
Yeah. If you're in the latter where you say, we just know we need communication training, then how are you going to send a post-training assessment to measure impact when you don't know what impact you were hoping for?
Right.
So you almost have to work backwards, right? Start with, what would I include in a post-training assessment?
Right.
That will help you know what information you're hoping this training will include and where you're going to move the needle or how you expect to move the needle in the organization, right? So that would be probably one of the biggest things. I think the other thing, if I could share a best practice, is it's really helpful to try to get information from as many in as many ways as possible. So you might feel really great about providing anonymous feedback via a survey, and you're happy to sit down at your computer and spend 10 or 15 minutes. Someone else might say, I would rather just get to talk to my manager and share some insights. I don't want to give this sort of anonymous feedback, or I feel like I want to be able to provide a bit more detail than what a ranking system allows me to do. And so I would rather have a sit down. And I think we're always going to have people in our organizations where some prefer one way and some prefer another. So if we only use surveys or we only use one-on-one conversations or small focus groups, whatever it might be, I think we're going to miss out on some important feedback. And so in order to do that properly, I think you want to have the feedback survey, and you might want to have a one-on-one, and you might want to have a small focus group to get the best sense of what impact are we driving in
Shake
this organization.
It up, right?
Yeah.
Like, let's have some fun with it.
That's right, yeah. But also then be able to say, well, on the survey they were saying this, that was supported by what my one-on-one conversations brought out, and yet there's still maybe one or two discrepancies we have to think about or we have to figure out, right?
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
I think that variety of methods is really important.
Really rounds everything out, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does, yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Good feedback, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess this is very significant, doing these training surveys, post-training, sorry, pardon me, assessments and surveys, when it comes to measuring ROI. Because like you'd said, without knowing what you want to target, how can you effectively train your people, right? So all in all, this whole process is going to help you figure out your return on investment.
Yeah, I mean, it will certainly help. It is really challenging, I would say, to discern ROI of training, especially if it's training of what we'd call kind of soft skills or kind of long-term skills.
Okay.
So let me give you an example.
Yeah.
Communication. You do training on communication.
Yeah.
And your leaders are saying that they're better communicators. How do you measure again, the keeping in mind the return on investment is all about sort of how much did you get back for the amount you invested. We invested $30,000 in a training program. How much did the company make as a result of that investment? That's really hard to tell because how can you put an exact number on how can you put a number on now that they're more effective communicators, it's made us this much more money as a company. That's a challenge. Now, I think any leader in any organization would say there is a value on those things. There is there is a value on those soft skills. There's a value in being able to manage people with empathy. Yep. There's a value in being able to manage conflicts. There's a value in being able to motivate and engage your team members. Right. But it is tricky to put a numeric value on it, right?
Would you almost put, like, I mean, not to put a value on it right now in this moment, but would you almost say that has a lot to do with retention?
Could be. That could be one
could
part of it.
Could that be a measurement? Yeah. Like, is, you know, how to measure communication? If you're looking at all those things, I'm hearing, like, people wanting to stay and, you know, turnover and things like that.
Yeah, so, that's a good point. You could even look at not just amount, you know, the amount of revenue that's increased, but you could even say, oh, before this, people would stay maybe 1 or 2 years, and now they're staying 4 to 5 years on average. And now one thing you could do is, especially if you ask your, if you have an exit interview, which I know we're getting a little bit away from post-training assessments, but if you do an exit interview where you're asking people, why did you leave? Right? What might have made you stay? Mm-hmm. And if one of the feedback that you receive is a lack of communication, there's been a lack of communication in the organization, then if you target training around improving communication and then you suddenly have stronger retention, or maybe not suddenly, but over time you notice you have better retention, then it very well could be a result of addressing those issues. So then you could say that, okay, there's been a very clear ROI on this project or on this training because we now have the stronger retention that we were looking for.
Right.
And that's an example of going back to the goal of bringing in this training, the goal of doing this training was to increase communication that will lead to better retention. So then on the other end of that, if you can measure retention and see that it's increased, well, okay, then it's been working.
Well, okay. That's great. I got my wheels turning here because I got another question maybe doesn't quite pertain to what we're talking about. But also, I kind of, well, sorry, it does. 100% it does. That just made me think that when you were doing post-training assessment and survey questions, and we're talking about the training and if it helped, you know, your long-term goals in the organization. So maybe another survey isn't just to the participants and what these things are like. This is like any survey. So essentially, if you're training your frontline supervisors to be, say, better communicators, you could evaluate the people underneath them.
Yes.
Right? Like their, you know, or their managers, or if it's the managers of the frontline supervisors, you could then like almost do what we call it, a 360.
That's right.
So you're exactly right. Again, a lot of work. That does seem like a lot of work.
But you're right. I mean, you could say, well, if we're training our leaders to be better communicators, who are the people that are at the end of that, that are receiving that communication? It's probably their direct reports and their managers, the managers of the people in the frontline leaders. So yeah, if we then say, okay, frontline leaders have taken this course on communication, let's ask their direct reports. Are they better at communicating? What do you think? How would you rate them? And then you went to those people's managers, the managers of the frontline leaders, and said, are they better at communicating with you? For sure, you'd get this this sort of image, this picture of how they are communicating and whether it's better. So it is good to do a self-rating. It's good for the participants themselves, the learners, to be able to say either, yes, I think I'm better, or no, I don't, and maybe here's why. But it is right. You're exactly right that it's also good to then get their direct reports and their managers, the people they're communicating to on both ways, in both directions, to give feedback as well. So that's a really great way to determine that assessment piece of, did we have an impact on with this training or not? Yeah.
I always love to contribute to these leaders.
Well, I appreciate your contributions.
the final question for today, how could these assessments, you know, facilitate continuous improvement? Because we all know here at Unique Training and Development, we, you know, want everybody to be better leaders and keep improving themselves. And yeah, so how could these assessments facilitate, you know, continuous improvement for organizations?
I mean, a lot of organizations are constantly working towards continuous improvement, or they have continuous improvement initiatives that they're working on. And the feedback loop is what you need to make those better and to continue. The continuous improvement, right? Mm-hmm. So in the same way, when you're using training feedback assessments or training assessments, mm-hmm. rather, you need to take that into consideration. So if you get a post-training assessment that says either, you know, we haven't moved the needle as much as we had hoped, so the impact has been less than we wanted, mm-hmm. then the continuous improvement is, okay, do we identify that we still want to continue the improvement? Are we happy with where the needle mm-hmm. has been moved to? Mm-hmm. If not, then we need to now continue training,
right.
but identifying a new goal and figuring out what we need to change about the training in order for us to reach the goal this time.
Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, yeah, there's continuous improvement. So we take the training that was done, we measure the impact of that training, mm-hmm. And we measure even, you know, how far did it move the needle on our business objectives and on the goals.
Mm-hmm.
And then we decide if we're going to continue that, if we still decide that's a priority for the organization, what are we going to change about the training to make
right.
sure that either for the next groups or if it's the same people going through the same training, maybe annually or something,
mm-hmm.
how are we going to make sure that next year we do reach those targets?
Mm-hmm.
What was it that didn't allow the training to meet those impact targets, right? So then we're able to do that.
Great. Thanks so much, Kirk, for coming in and chatting with us today. I hope our listeners gained some valuable insight on post-training surveys. I know I did. If your company uses it, please let us know what you do to support continuous improvement in your manufacturing organization. Thanks so much. Talk to you later.